I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moe!
Rugby Weekly.
Little reverse pass.
Hello everyone and welcome to Rugby Weekly Extra. Murray Kinsella and Owen Toolan are taking well-earned breathers this week. So Gavin Casey here in the hot seat and I'm joined for the first time on Rugby Weekly Extra by friend of the show, Stephen Ferris. Stephen, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, Gavin. Yeah, it's good to be back on talking rugby. It's been a while since I caught up with you and the other lads. I see Bernard Jackman probably too much these days working on some games. But yeah, it's a lot to digest after the weekend, I suppose. So much expectation and hype and, you know, the thought of winning trophies just around the corner. And then all of a sudden, things seem to come crashing down for Leinster and Ulster, obviously, who I'm talking about. So yeah, very much a disappointing weekend. And it's hard to kind of pick yourself back up as a fan and as a supporter. So I'm just wondering how hard it is for those lads that actually played in the game. I'm sure it must be very, very tough.
That was actually going to be my first question. You're a little bit removed now from your playing days. So how different is it to experience a defeat like that for Ulster as a fan and a pundit compared to what it used to be like when you were in that dressing room?
Yeah, it's never easy, is it? Like, and you know, that's the obvious answer is that it's always difficult. It's always hard to process it. You know, what went wrong? You know, looking back over the game, I know you've maybe had Paul O'Connell talking about, you know, sitting in a changing room with his head in his hands, just going through, oh, why did I throw that line out? That was the wrong call. You know, doubting yourself through moments of the game, after the game. And I think it takes a couple of weeks for it actually to settle in and see how the process has actually went. But yeah, it's going to be tough for the lads. Like, it's going to be tough for the lads. Unfortunately for Leinster, it's another big occasion where they've fallen short. For Ulster, back in the dizzy heights of European semi-finals is a great place to be, but obviously you want to kick on and they haven't been able to do that. So just huge disappointment, Gav, I think, right across the board. And even into Irish rugby, because if you do delve a little bit deeper into the Leicester and the La Rochelle performances, you know, the physicality, the size, the power game that us Irish have, you know, not been good at dealing with over the last couple of seasons in an Irish jersey. It seems to have come back and haunted us a little bit more in the club game, which is obviously disappointing.
Yeah, we actually have loads of questions from the 42 members on that very topic. I'll throw a couple of them to you here and we'll get into that. The kind of physicality element and maybe the comparable dearth of such for the Irish provinces getting exposed to some extent over the weekend. Here is Ryan. It'd be great to hear the lads' view on this debate. Why can't Irish teams live with power? And why haven't we come up with a way to deal with it? It seems to me that the chat about Nusafora's role is too narrow and focused only on producing players. It should be equally about shaping a philosophy of how we play, like Japan did, or the way they do in New Zealand, and making sure that philosophy and its execution is good enough to beat the best teams. That's probably a wider conversation about Nusafora, but just to continue with the similar theme of question, Kean Hyland was wondering, does say Stuart Lancaster have a bit of a blind spot as a coach in that some of his teams do get picked apart by power games, physical teams. He talks about the 2015 Rugby World Cup against Wales, Ireland bossed his Grand Slam team in the Aviva. You know, loads of these questions basically. I won't read them all, but clearly we have found a problem. And even when you look at the Six Nations, there could have been an argument to be made that we had found a way to actually solve the problem in how we dealt with England. But I guess you can't really argue with what we saw over the weekend. It was Leicester rolling back the years to a degree and resembling a Leicester team of old and winning the collisions in the second half against Ulster. And La Rochelle, with a number of freak athletes, just proving too hot to handle, too strong to handle.
Yeah. So let's just revisit back to the question about, you know, why do we not kind of play more like Japan? You know, why do we not take that approach? Well, that's all well and good, but Japan got smashed by South Africa in the Rugby World Cup, and they're a big physical side who ended up going on to win the Rugby World Cup. And there's no substitute for power, for physical size, for winning the collisions both on both sides of the ball. And I think with Ulster at the weekend, specifically Ulster at the weekend, the intensity that they brought to their attack in the first half, they didn't bring the same intensity to their defence. They weren't in that sprinter position, getting off the line, absolutely trying to smoke guys, trying to make big game-changing hits. Lots more soaked tackles, not many dominant tackles. And then you watch the way Leinster tried to attack at times during the game against La Rochelle. They were trying to play a bit more like Japan. Their speed of ball was still very, very quick. Like it was, like Luke McGrath was getting that ball away so, so fast at times during the game. But if you keep running into 18-wheeler trucks and you keep getting battered, and then the momentum gets taken out of it and everything slows down. Like for me, the only way that Leinster were going to beat that La Rochelle team, especially in the second half, was if they could continue that multi-phase at that level of tempo. And they couldn't. If anything, the tempo sort of shortened down because they were losing the contacts after four, five, six phases. And yes, of course, it's down to physical size and power and, you know, whatever else you want to use. But it's a good bloody defensive system as well that they had in place. You know, everybody's talking about, yeah, La Rochelle are just so big and so powerful, and you know, they blew Leinster off the park, and you know, Leinster are playing these Mickey Mouse teams in the Pro 14 every week. Let's not forget here, La Rochelle are a well-coached side. Yes, they have some superstars littered through their squad, but they're well-drilled. They can score tries. They seem to have a good axis there at 9 and 10. And Rog is getting them firing. So for me, it's a combination of a lot of things. And it's also turning up on the day, Gav, on the big occasion. And I felt that La Rochelle did turn up and Leinster sort of went into their shells. I know Leinster, everybody's talking about them, that they deserve to be in the lead at halftime. But I still didn't think that they played particularly well. And they did have a slightly off day for sure. Again, how big is the set piece in huge games of rugby? Let's go back to the Rugby World Cup final. Absolutely massive. Let's go back to the quarter final with Saracens and Leinster. It was the outcome of the game. That was the deciding of the game. The scrum this weekend. And just some of those questions coming in about Nusafora and about the pathway and about, you know, selecting players and how do we grow the game and have a bigger pool of players to choose from. Like, Ed Byrne is an Irish international player. If he was playing in the French system right now, he would be absolutely nowhere near the top 6 to 8 loose head props in the top 14. And, you know, Tadhg Furlong's probably a different beast, but I just feel that there's so much more improvement needed in certain areas and positions. The loose head has been talked about. I know they're bringing a prop in from the Crusaders, Gav, is it?
Yeah, Alatoa, yeah.
Yeah, Leinster bringing a prop in from the Crusaders. So, yeah, it's just, I think that in particular, we're a bit light in some positions and there needs to be more focus from academies, from Nusafora, of producing bigger, stronger guys that are going to play in the front row, that are going to play in the second row. And like James Ryan, you know, James Ryan has been incredible over the last few years, but you put him standing beside Will Skelton and it's like, you know, man versus boy, David versus Goliath. And we're talking about James Ryan being one of the, you know, maybe his name's on the plane. If not, he's a bolter for the Lions squad. And, you know, in years to come, he's our next Paul O'Connell that we're looking towards to drive this Irish team on. And he just doesn't look anywhere near the same physical size as some of the lads that he played against there at the weekend. And it's really difficult just to go and pick a guys who have potential and say you need to lift weights and get bigger and get stronger. There's obviously genetics that are involved along the way, but it's a conundrum that Irish rugby have not been able to find an answer for. And Gav, I don't have the answer at the minute and I don't get paid to find the answer. And that's what Leo Cullen, Stuart Lancaster, Andy Farrell and, you know, David Nusafora to a certain extent need to try and figure out, because the game has felt, I don't know what you think, the game feels like it's almost shifting back towards that physicality and bigger teams and, you know, more set piece driven, where just after the World Cup it seemed to be going the other way ever so slightly. It very much feels like we're heading back towards that again.
Yeah, definitely does. Remember a few years ago, people talking about the All Blacks streamlining themselves physically, and obviously they have a massive, they place a massive importance on skill, but it is a pattern really across the board now that these massive athletes are becoming a little bit more prevalent, and that dynamism and that power game is extremely important. Do you think with somebody like Skelton, there's an element of just his being a freak specimen, and there's actually not a great deal you can do about that? It's not like other countries are producing a lot of Will Skeltons either. You know, like, the guy is a colossus, and maybe Leinster have been unfortunate to just happen to come across him at his peak a couple of times at pivotal moments.
Yeah, possibly. Like, but like, Ryan Baird is, you know, phenomenal in the gym. I remember like 3 or 4 years ago, I was covering a game down in the RDS and was chatting to one of the S&C coach, and they were like, this guy, Ryan Baird, is an absolute monster in the gym. So powerful, so quick, very agile. But I don't feel that he uses it the same way that Will Skelton uses his. Like, do you know what I mean? It feels like Ryan Baird is an unbelievable athlete, but he should be going around bashing boys. He should be going around absolutely taking lads apart. And I don't feel that he's using he's genetically blessed, of course he is, but there's also been a lot of hard work and graft in the gym, I'm sure, over the years. But I feel that he can use it better. And Will Skelton knows he's a big man and knows he can get over the gain line at certain times. But it's about negating players like Will Skelton. How do you turn his strengths into weaknesses? You know, trying to isolate him in the defensive line, running at soft shoulders when he gets the ball. Trying to absolutely leather the guy down at the ankle so as he knows that he's going to be in for this all day long. And once the La Rochelle lads got their tails up, it seemed to get easier for them rather than more difficult. And that's the concerning thing. And again, Gav, come back to even the Leicester in the second half against Ulster, the English performances over the last, say, three seasons against Ireland, is trying to stop the rot when these big guys get into their stride. And I certainly feel like Ireland have a few. Like, we were talking about Cian Healy 6-7 years ago being this incredible beast, this huge man squatting 300 odd kgs, and now he just seems normal. Like, you know, he just seems like he's a normal guy. He's not any big shakes when it comes to big men in the front row. Like, it's the game is certainly evolving every single year when it comes to the size and physicality stakes.
What about yourself? You were a power athlete and actually stood above the parapet, so to speak, in your dynamism and in your explosivity as a player. Were there things that you worked on to, I mean, I'm sure there were things that you worked on to improve that aspect of your game, but how much of it do you put down to work, and how much of it do you put down to genetics, to which you alluded there a moment ago?
For me personally, a fast twitch athlete, so very explosive, very powerful, but tended to burn out. You know, didn't have a huge engine on me. Fatigued a lot in games. I'm not sure if Ryan Baird or somebody using him as an example is similar. But, I think if I was still playing, Gav, I wouldn't be playing at 110 kgs. I think I'd be more like 120. And be putting on more size, getting bigger, trying to get stronger. When you lose a bit of speed, you have to think of something else to make up that gap or to bridge that gap. So for me, it probably would have been playing at a lot heavier weight. I think a lot of people seem to forget as well, Gav, that, you know, rugby's not just all about physical power. It's about having a set of balls as well. Having a big heart and putting your body on the line and giving absolutely everything, whether it's in a tackle or in a counter ruck or just in phase play or whatever it is, that you go hard. And like, I went hard probably too much. Like, it didn't matter if it was zebra and you're winning 35 points at home on a Friday night. Like, I approached that the same level as I approached, you know, a Grand Slam decider in the Millennium Stadium, like, probably to my detriment that I had to retire early because of picking up so many injuries. So I think you got to remember that too, that sometimes it's about who wants to win that collision more. Obviously, if you're a bigger man, it makes that a little bit easier. But I've watched a lot of games over the last number of years to know that not always the bigger man wins the collisions.
Let's chat about that Ulster game then and some of the incidents within it. It did seem to hinge on that moment with Nadolo and John Cooney. I don't think there's any point in sugarcoating it, really. That was the moment, to my mind at least, that the game changed. I'm sure a lot of people agree. What do you make of that decision, first and foremost? And do you agree, I guess, that that was the moment in which Leicester started to turn the screw and Ulster's wheels came off?
You must have been reading all the Ulster rugby Twitter fans going absolutely nuts about Nadolo. And, you know, I think it was a rugby incident. I do. I don't think there's any intent in it. He seems to be a nice big fella who plays on the line, uses his, you know, sheer size to win the gain line. But I think he just went for the ball. And the way Cooney was so low when he caught the ball, he just caught him a cracker on the chin. I think it was accidental. If there was going to be a decision, I think it would have had to have been a red card. I don't think there's, you know, a yellow card would have come into it. Again, Ulster supporters saying, and I suppose the law book would back you up a little bit, that intent doesn't really come into it at times. You know, he knocked the guy out with a swinging arm, so he should be red carded. But for me, I don't think the way that panned out, the way that the ball bounced up, John went down for it. He was sort of half going for it, left his arm there. And, you know, I think if the arm hadn't have caught him square in the chin, like, he would have been okay. You know, I think it was just one of those freakish things. And do I think that the game changed on that moment? Oh, I don't know. I think there was a change of tactic at halftime, Gav. I don't know what you think, but it seemed to be like that Ulster seemed to want to protect an 11-point lead away from home, which is always very, very dangerous. Kick the ball away an awful lot more, cram back their defence. And unfortunately for, you know, Albie Mathewson, who's, you know, been ridiculed by a lot of fans on social media for his performance, he doesn't come onto the pitch and just box kick the ball just because that's what he feels he needs to do. He's been given a message from the sideline. Of course he has. You know, he's been warming up for a couple of minutes waiting for John Cooney. There's people in his ear, whether that's, you know, Dan McFarlane or Jared Payne or whoever, you know, telling them how to relieve pressure, what we want to do. And it just didn't work for Ulster. And again, a bit like Leinster in that second half, how do you stop the rot, Gav? How do you stop the momentum? And for Leicester in the first half, it was getting to halftime. It was making changes. It was, right, lads, let's start afresh. We're going to approach this game as if it was the first minute. They were lucky to be 17-6 down. Like, let's face it, it should have been another score at least in there for Ulster. And then Ulster in the second half, 44 minutes in, they concede a try. So how could they stop the rot from 44 minutes to 80 minutes? They couldn't. They couldn't stop the rot. It felt like there was a lack of experience there. It felt like, you know, should there have been a 5-minute bust-up brawl to, you know, just get stuck into people? The referee's going and looking at TMO decisions. There's a huge injury for a long period of time in the 50-minute mark, and you just kind of get everybody in, get reset, try and figure out a game plan for the next 5 or 6 minutes to stop this onslaught from Leinster, or from Leicester, that just kept on coming. And I feel, Gav, that they didn't figure it out. And if the game had been played for another 80 minutes, that they still wouldn't have figured it out. And that's the worrying thing, that, you know, they just couldn't do it. And I felt like that in 2012 in the Heineken Cup final against Leinster. And I was playing in that team, and I was one of the senior guys in that team. And we didn't have an answer for it. And we were just looking around saying, you know, somebody please, you know, stop this. How do we stop this? And we just couldn't do it. I'm not sure Dan McFarlane knew how to do it either. And again, if Ulster find themselves in this situation again, they're going to have to try and figure this out.
It's funny, like, I actually watched the second half of the Ulster game on, I had it recorded because Michael Conlon was fighting at the same time. So I watched the first half. I threw on Conlon's fight. I obviously left the game at a point in which Ulster were up and playing well. And I thought, you know what, this is going okay. And I'd seen you tweet going Ulster by 30. And I was kind of, chuckling at that, right? And then I swear, as I just checked in on Twitter during Colin's fight to see how Ulster were getting on, and the top tweet on my feed was you going, Leicester by 30. And I was like, Christ, what's after happening here? And it did seem to switch very quickly. And I wonder, you know, what you were mentioning there about Mathewson, the fact that he will have obviously have gotten instructions to kick the ball more, and maybe it's a case of soaking Leicester up that a little bit more. Does that then manifest itself or materialise in a slight, it's not a lack of focus, but maybe a lack of physicality, if you like, in that you're kind of ceding possession a little bit more, you're playing a little bit more conservatively, and then we suddenly see Ulster soak tackling a lot more than they had been doing. And their line speed seemed to slow down that little bit more in the second half as well. Maybe that could be tiredness, but I just wonder with that change in strategy, does that blow up in your face then in losing some of that aggression that they had in the first half?
There was a change in strategy. Is it because Leicester then got their tails up and they got a bit of that early momentum in the second half that it changed even more and that they went into their shells even more? I don't know.
I just think that Ulster didn't really adapt to what they were trying to achieve in the second half. I've said this a few times before, probably said it earlier in this interview, that Ulster are very good with ball in hand. We know that they've got some exciting players. You know, Jacob Stockdale can turn a game on its head. But we almost played into Ulster's bad habits because we know that Jacob Stockdale isn't the best defender. We know that Billy Burns isn't the best defender. We know we don't have the most physical back row in club rugby. That's, you know, with lots of pace and lots of guys there that can come in and move the ball quickly and get on the ball in open space. But when you have to roll your sleeves up, Ulster couldn't do that because they went back into their bad habits. They went back to not being able to play in the front foot because Leicester wouldn't allow them. And the change in tactics obviously has a huge impact on how certain players can perform individually, and then that has a huge impact on how they can perform as a collective. And for me, the John Cooney didn't swing it. It was the tactics that had obviously been sent on by the coaching staff to, you know, keep trying to put the ball in behind them, keep applying pressure through their kicking game, where that's getting away from everything that's good about Ulster's attack. Like, I've watched Ulster, you know, we watched that first try against Leinster in the Pro 14 final in the Aviva Stadium, and it was just out of this world. It was James Hume, you know, burnt James Lowe on the outside and get into the corner. But as soon as Leinster went, well, hold on a second here, let's tighten things up. Let's just put a brick wall in front of them and tell them to come and run through it. They'll run out of ideas. Next thing you know, they'll go back into their shells. And when that happened again with Ulster there in that second half, that they did go back into their shells. They did start making individual mistakes. They did start losing the gain line or not winning the gain line in defence. And they got away from that. And why, Gavin? Because for me, my own opinion, they went to their box kicking game. They went to their kicking game, and a lot of pressure and a lot of bad stuff has come the way of Albie Mathewson. But I don't believe it's solely one player's fault because I can assure you he's been told to deliver that tactic certainly in the second half when he came on as a substitute.
Where did it go from here, Stephen? Like, it feels as though they have been building something under Dan McFarland, and yet this is a familiar feeling now as well. So what do they need to kick them on to the next level, and do you think they're capable of kicking on to the next level, or you as a fan growing frustrated with their seeming lack of ability to take that one step further?
Well, the harsh reality is I don't believe that they're going to kick on and win European Cups. Like, again, you have loose head prop, sub-loose head prop and Andy Warwick. Doesn't have big game nice. You have Tom O'Toole, who, you know, so much hype and smoke blown up his backside by lots of people throughout the RFU, you know, third choice tight head prop in Ireland. Come on here, like, you know, this is big boy stuff now. This isn't Ulster A games we're talking about. Ellis Gaines, like, who isn't renowned for being an unbelievable scrummager, you know, gets stuck into Marty Moore, and there was a couple of scrums that, you know, they annihilated Ulster at. You come to the tight head, we don't have a recognised born and bred Ulster tight head that's coming through the ranks. You know, you take Ian Henderson out of the second row, and you've got Alan O'Connor and Kieran Treadwell. Kieran Treadwell, obviously, a born English guy who's played for Ireland, you know, came through the Harlequins Academy. He wasn't good enough to make it at the Harlequins, but, you know, he's good enough to come over to Ireland and get in, and he has played reasonably well. And something that I notice a lot about the Ulster players, Gav, is that, you know, they get man of the match performances against, you know, the likes of Kieran Treadwell. He gets a man of the match performance against Zebra at home. And then the likes of Tom O'Toole, he comes on and he makes a great impact against Dragons at home. And the next thing, you get thrown into a big game, or a game that's, you know, against some players that have some international experience, the likes of Gaines, the likes of Dan Cole. You know, I know they made, you know, with Brent Clare and Hayes coming on, they made changes there. But I just think, don't think the strength and depth is good enough at Ulster Rugby to go on and win European titles. And I don't think it's good enough to go on and win Pro 14 titles either. And that's something that Dan McFarland has got to try and figure out. And, you know, there's so many guys. I know, Gav, you maybe agree or disagree, that, you know, I've looked at a lot of team sheets over the last number of years, especially from an Ulster point of view. And there's been two or three Ulster guys that have come through the Ulster Academy, that have come through the Ulster school system, who are, you know, are playing for Ulster. And the rest of the guys are, you know, Tom O'Toole, you know, Rob Herring, Marty Moore, Alan O'Connor, you know, the whole back row, Jordy Murphy, could see it when he was there, Nick Timoney, you've John Cooney, Billy Burns. There's 10 of the starting team that are not from Ulster, like, you know. And I know the game is changing a lot, and you know, players, I don't think there's any loyalty anymore, like the way the game has become more of a business. And if I was a player too, Gav, I would be exactly the same. Don't get me wrong here. I'm not saying that the likes of Jordy Murphy should be staying at Leinster and trying to battle through and get it back into the starting team. No way. Like, there's lots of these decisions are business decisions as well, family decisions. You know, there's lots of mouths to feed as well. And, you know, fair play to those guys for doing it. But this isn't about those guys coming up the road. This is more about what Ulster are producing to try and win those European Cups in the future, Gav, to try and get to those Pro 14 finals once again. And in my opinion, they're not producing them. You know, there's young Nathan Doak, Neil Doak's son, 18, 19 years of age, straight out of school. Everybody's talking about him. He's the next Ruan Pienaar. He's the same height, you know, very athletic, reads the game so well. He's been a ball boy since 5 years of age, watching Ulster play rugby. And there's talk coming out of the Ulster camp that, you know, that this young fella has to go and earn his stripes first before he can represent, you know, in the big stage. I'm like, going, what? Like, if he was playing for Leinster, or if he was playing for Saracens, he'd be in, he'd be getting the big game experience, he'd be getting wheeled out, he'd be seeing what he's like under pressure. And, you know, these are young fellas that are chomping at the bit to represent Ulster more frequently. And they're sort of been held back. Now, it's going to be very intriguing, Gav, to see what the team sheets are like over the next 4 or 5 weeks in the upcoming rounds of the Rainbow Cup, or what's left of this Rainbow Cup. I know Dan sort of alluded to, you know, lots of change in his post-match interview after the game against Leicester. So maybe we will see some more of these guys coming through. But just to reiterate there, that there needs to be more coming through this Ulster Academy for Ulster to be successful in the future.
And to finish on Leinster, Stephen, before I let you go, I suppose people have thought differently about Leinster over the last number of years. They've been absolutely lauded for their talent production lines and some of the players they have produced. And it didn't transpire to be enough against La Rochelle. What do Leinster need to do differently in order for them to take that next step that they're seemingly incapable of taking at the moment at the very top tier or the top table of European rugby?
Gav, I thought they were probably a little bit closer than what they showed at the weekend. I thought they were closer than that to breaking this power game down. they put so many teams to the sword with their A, B, and C team over the last, feels like a decade now, but over the last number of years, that we automatically assume that they are getting better every single week, and they're maybe not. And winning by 40 points or 50 points at home with a scattering of academy players throughout the squad, I'm not sure if that is making them better. And I know, like, Andy Goode, myself, Big Jim Hamilton, you know, Dan Tui, we had a bit of crack on Twitter, you know, a bit of slagging back and forth about the Gallagher Premiership, the Pro 14. But it is true, like, they are tougher games every single week, and they're probably, you know, learning a hell of a lot more every week, because it is such a tough league, where I think, you know, this the Leinster team that was wheeled out there at the weekend, you're not going to see that consistency of that Leinster team for 10 games of the season, 12 games of the season. And yeah, it's a tough one to answer. And I'm sure Leo Cullen is finding it very tough to answer as well, is how do they get over the winning line? And I think the reason why I thought it was much closer was because of that performance against Exeter, you know, because that they came from behind, they showed a lot of maturity. Johnny went off injured. Ross came in and controlled things brilliantly. But I felt that they had the upper hand a little bit up front. And, you know, as soon as that got turned on its head against La Rochelle, they struggled massively. So, yeah. Like, you know, what's the outlook for Leinster now? Leo Cullen being talked about, you know, he wants to stay in coaching possibly. Look at another team. He's only signed for 1 year. Is Stuart Lancaster the man? Everybody talks about, you know, how good he is. Like, I've never worked with him. He seems like a really good guy. But, like, you know, he got Leeds relegated. You know, he brought an England Churchill Cup team to the Churchill Cup that were supposed to walk it and didn't. You know, when he was head coach of England, they fell very early in the tournament. And I'm not sure if he is the right guy to take Leinster to beating La Rochelle to lose in European Cup semi-finals and finals. And, like, I think they'll continue on to beat teams in the Pro 14 and probably win the Pro 14 title year in, year out, and, you know, a record fifth time in next year or whenever it is. I've no doubt about that. Maybe Munster will run them a little bit closer. Maybe Ulster will run them slightly closer. But when it comes to the big European stage, that's where they want to be. And it meant so much to them this time round because of that demoralising defeat to Saracens. And unfortunately for them, they come unstuck once more. So, yeah, it's an interesting time, Gav, isn't it? In the whole outlook for Leinster, for Ulster, and for Irish rugby in general. Like, we're not far away from this Lions tour. How many Irish guys are going to go on it? The summer tours now been, you know, it's now done and dusted, gone. What's the outlook for that? And yeah, it's challenging times, and it's been a disappointing weekend. And it's amazing how everybody's, you know, belief and of what direction we're all going in. And, you know, Leinster are going to keep trucking on. They're going to, you know, keep battering teams, and Ulster are in such a good place at the minute. And, you know, two defeats, and we all seem to be looking around for answers once more.
Yeah, it's been incredibly dour talking to you over the last half an hour or so, but I really do appreciate it. No, top man.
We're here, Jose Mourinho's manager of Roma. There we go. I'll pick everybody up.
Yeah, well, the Romans are in for a really exciting 18 months there, aren't they? Come here. Thanks a million, big man. I really appreciate your time.
No worries, Gav. Thanks a million, Chief. Cheers.
Top man. Thank you to everybody at home as well. We'll be back on Thursday for the regular pod. Until then, mind yourselves and take it easy.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could have me 5 mil a year. I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moe!
Rugby weekly.
Little reverse pass. Oh!
Drive Ireland! Magic!
You're not alive, boys, so you start kicking when the room is...